Mr. Seltzer, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Mitchell Seltzer. I represent Gregory Kittle, who was sentenced to a term of 24 months after a revocation of his supervised release by the Honorable Judge Leon. The basis of the revocation was a series of convictions in the Superior Court for the District of Columbia, and we do not challenge that there was a basis for revocation. What we challenge here today is whether the judge proceeded correctly procedurally in ascertaining the sentence in this case.
We're with plain error, right? These objections weren't made at the sentencing.
Well, this was not a case where there was a PSI or anything of that nature, so there could be no formal objection as in a...
Well, but at the imposition of the sentence was done at a hearing, correct?
That's correct.
All right. Were these procedural objections raised at the hearing?
Well, I would say they were raised through the filing of a sentencing memorandum.
All right.
Asserted what the objections were.
Well, all right, go ahead.
Specifically, our main point here is that, consistent with Gall, the judge should allow both parties to argue for a particular sentence and then consider all of the 18 U.S.C. 3553A factors to determine if they support either party's proposal. Also, Simpson, which I guess is a key case out of this circuit, states that not every factor has to be addressed, but the court should address any factor that the defendant specifically cites. Here, the essence of the argument was that because he was going to be serving 134 months, that a concurrent sentence as opposed to a consecutive one would be sufficient to meet the purposes of the statute.
That's what the guidelines recommend, right? Isn't the guideline...
That's correct.
Yeah.
The guidelines do recommend...
So for him doing that, there's nothing unusual about that. That's not something that's extraordinary or that ought to catch our attention as maybe something's amiss, is it?
No, not extraordinary. However, I would argue that he needed to be more specific as to addressing why the 134 months, if it would have been sufficient, in other words, adding his own sentence in a concurrent fashion, that it wasn't necessary. The specific factors that we reference that he did not address, in our opinion, is whether it was sufficient for deterrence, whether it was sufficient to protect the public for a lengthy period, whether it's sufficient to provide services and vocational training. The court basically stated that it was its policy not to run sentences in this fashion concurrently.
Why isn't that a good policy? In other words, your client on supervised release didn't learn his lesson. I mean, he continued to commit violent crimes, and what is wrong with adding to a sentence when you violated supervised release by committing those violent crimes over and above what you're going to get for the violent crimes? Because on supervised release, you already have a criminal history. So what's wrong? In other words, what's wrong with adding to a sentence for a violation of supervised release?
I'm not sure there's anything wrong with the ultimate result, frankly, but the question is whether procedurally he covered all the ground.
Well, procedurally, you said he didn't address deterrence. He did. In the transcript at 9, Judge Leon says, I think you just have to use this time as productively as you can and stay away, obviously, from guns and drugs and things like that. And he's not using the formal language of deterrence. That's a deterrent. That's a consideration of the deterrent effect that his sentence will have.
But it seems to me it doesn't address why that couldn't have been a concurrent sentence. I mean, that's really when you cut through this all, that's the question. Did he specifically and sufficiently answer that question in light of the factors, whether the concurrent time would equally serve the purposes?
Well, given that the policy of the guidelines and the preference of the guidelines is that it not be, that it be served consecutively and not concurrently, shouldn't the question be just the opposite? And does he need to give an explanation for why he's following the policy? It would seem to me he need to give an explanation if he's going to depart from the policy. But assuming you're right, and I'm not certain that you are, that he didn't give an adequate explanation for why consecutive as opposed to concurrent. But it seems to me you may have it just exactly backwards.
Well, it seems to me, and I believe Gall discusses this, whether or not it's a departure type of situation or not, you still have to explain specifically the basis. And I'm not sure he did that. Certainly didn't address why.
So it's your understanding that when he's following the policy of the guidelines, which declares a preference for consecutive as opposed to concurrent, when he's doing that, he needs to give a reasoned explanation for why he's following the policy of the guidelines?
Yes, because at the end of the day, the guidelines, in a sense, don't control anymore.
Right.
The guidelines become sort of the first factor, and then one goes through.
Well, presumptions are created, right, with the guidelines. We use them to create presumptions. They're not definitive.
But the fact that a sentence is within the guidelines does not necessarily mean that it's an appropriate sentence.
No, that's right. That's right.
Because it must be after analysis of the 3553 factors. Rather than go on at length, that's really the essence of the argument here, that he did not consider those factors, specifically deterrence, especially need for rehabilitation, whether that was long enough, whether protecting the public for a lengthy period of time, whether the 134 months would be long enough.
All right, and I ask again, did you raise any of these objections at the hearing? You told me you filed something ahead of time, but these were procedural errors that happened during the hearing. Did you say, Judge, you haven't considered this, you haven't considered that? Did you raise any of these?
I do not believe I raised it in that fashion. It'd be our point of view that raising it in a sentencing memorandum and where there's no chance to file formal objections, as with a PSI, I'm not quite sure how one would raise that at, I mean, it was.
Before the sentence is imposed, did the judge not say, is there anything else? Do you?
Well, I don't believe so, but I did not specifically say you didn't address vocational, you didn't address.
Is it your position that plain error is not the standard that we apply here?
Well, I mean, the court starts with abuse of discretion. I think that's the first starting point. It would be my position that it was sufficiently preserved through the memorandum and the argument at sentencing, so therefore be harmless error.
All right. Thank you. Is it Ms. Chasson?
Good morning. May it please the Court. Sarah Chasson on behalf of the United States. I'd like to begin just by briefly addressing the preservation question. And I believe that you asked Judge Henderson whether Mr. Seltzer had been given an opportunity at the sentencing to raise any objections, and indeed he had. At page 10 of the transcript, immediately after the court imposed the sentence, the court said it would find a 2-year sentence consecutive is the appropriate sentence under the circumstances and will sentence you accordingly under the circumstances. Mr. Seltzer, any questions? That was really the perfect opportunity for defense counsel to stand up and say, yes, I do have a question. You haven't adequately considered whether such a sentence is necessary, whether such a sentence will, in fact, deter my client, whether such a sentence is necessary to protect the public. All the issues that he's claiming now that were not properly considered by the district court. Second, with regard to the issue of concurrent versus consecutive time, the district court, we know from the transcript, again, did consider whether a consecutive or concurrent sentence was appropriate because the district court said so. Immediately after the district court acknowledged that it was his practice to sentence different time for different crimes, the district court at page 9 of the transcript said, I don't see this being one of those rare instances where it would be appropriate for me to deviate from that policy. And through that statement, the district court let us know that, in fact, he had considered whether a concurrent sentence was appropriate, even if he did not explicitly negate all the factors that would warrant opposing a concurrent sentence, but instead endorsed the reasoning supporting the consecutive sentence. If the court has no further questions, the government will submit on its brief.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Seltzer, you have 1 minute remaining.
The only point I would make is after the court's already ruled on its sentence and says any questions, I'm not sure that one can object at that point. In fact, often trial judge will say, I've ruled counsel. So I would just argue that that would not necessarily have been an appropriate time to have raised procedural objections.
All right. Mr. Seltzer, you were appointed by the court to represent Mr. Kittle, and we thank you for your assistance.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.